I'm Seattle Times political reporter Jim Bruner.
And I'm Seattle Times City Hall reporter Dan Beekman.
Let's talk politics. Welcome to episode 67 of The Overcast, the Seattle Times weekly politics and news podcast. This week, we're talking about the bill for the so-called McCleary solution coming due to taxpayers in King County and elsewhere. Joining us is State Senator Reuven Carlisle, a Democrat from Seattle, who has sort of raised an alarm and I imagine is hearing from constituents about these quite large bills that are in the offing. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
So let's just talk really quickly. I introduced this. You know, the McCleary solution, as I said, is the legislature was under a Supreme Court mandate to amply fund public schools. And the solution that was arrived at last year included what's sometimes called a property tax swap, moving around tax rates across the state to equalize them to help out poorer districts. But the result is in richer areas like Seattle, people are going to see quite a substantial property tax increase. Can you just walk us through kind of how we got here and what it's going to look like for your constituents?
Sure, absolutely. The essence of McCleary, of course, is that state has the obligation to fund public education. And what has happened, unfortunately, is that local levy, sort of your local school levy, has assumed a higher and higher percentage of the bill. So while Olympia plays footsies and plays around with funding, the local governments really can't do that and have no choice but to step up and provide a local levy. So those got sort of out of control, and they started becoming a disproportionately high percentage of the overall school funding costs. So the lawsuit said, all right, knock it off, boys and girls. You got to get your act together, and you got to fully fund it from the state, and that local levies should be enhancements, as opposed to sort of basic and core part of the bill. And so in that effort, we've reached a point where in bringing down local levies and bringing up state funding, the good friends on the Republican side sort of did a jolt to the system in 1 year where they went ahead and tried to accomplish all of it in 1 year.
I wanted to say, Senator Carlisle, you represent the 36th legislative district in the state Senate. That includes Lake Union, Belltown, Ballard, Greenwood, Magnolia, Queen Anne, a lot of very wealthy companies, a lot of really high property values. What is this tax increase that you referred to as a jolt going to do in your district?
Well, it's a really dramatic jolt. It's about, on average, around $750 per person per year. And look, let's look at the data for a second. This overall deal was about $7.3 billion in state increased funding. About $4.3 billion of that is going into schools. The rest, around $3 billion, is used to lower taxes in rural areas and in other parts of the state that don't have a high tax base. Now, that sounds great in theory, and clearly property taxes need to be a piece of it. What I object to is the extreme nature of it. It was an overwhelming reliance on property taxes, almost exclusively. And if all of those dollars or most of those dollars went into our schools, that would be a legitimate approach, but they're not, a fraction of it. So of the $750 increase in Seattle per year average, that raises about $112 million. What that raises for our schools, though, is only about $54 million. So we're barely getting 50 cents on the dollar for our 54,000 students. Now, that sounds like it's not the end of the world, but the problem is that in lowering taxes throughout the state, we went, as a legislature, so far down the road that we lowered taxes so much that most of the money in this whole picture is not being used for kids. It's, you know, a good chunk of it is really being used to lower taxes. It could have been much, much less punitive, not just on Seattle and not just on King County, but throughout the whole Puget Sound region.
And ever since this deal was made, people have been wondering, okay, what's this going to do to my pocketbook, right? And there were some estimates put out in the summer, and now we're getting closer to property tax bills actually going out next month in February. And we just started to get some of the first numbers out of the Snohomish County Assessor's Office, the King County Assessor's Office. According to the King County Assessor, when you look at all the various jurisdictions across King County and you look at how much the owner of a median assessed home is going to pay this year in 2018 compared to the owner of a median value home last year. And you look at all of those jurisdictions, countywide, there's going to be, on average, about a 17% bump. And you spoke out about that last week when you heard about it. Tell me how that struck you.
Well, I voted against this bill, and I have fought tooth and nail against such an extreme property tax dependence because it just whacks the middle class hard. So the idea that Seattle and King County and other areas are wealthy and the rest of the state is low income is just a ridiculous, old-fashioned cliche that is just unhelpful to everything. There are extraordinary numbers of low-income folks who are going to be really impacted by this throughout the state. So let's look at some other areas. It's not only that 17% increase, but it's that the state legislature's actions, about 67% of that increase is just this one vote. So my objection was the Republicans demand that we raise middle-class property taxes as the anchor of this entire program. At the end of last session, the end of this McCleary package, there was not one corporation, not one large company in the state of Washington who was unhappy with this deal. And the reason they were not unhappy is because we didn't tax them. There are some that pay more property taxes, of course, but that's a modest piece of it for them relative to their overall revenues. Let me give you two examples that are important. We have other options, and we could have done other things. We chose not to because the political establishment here in Olympia is addicted to the idea that a tax is okay when it's on the middle class or regular folks and spread broadly. It's not okay if it closes a tax break. And that's one of the challenges that we face, and I've got examples. I got to take a roll call. I'll be right back.
You know, Senator Carlisle is joining us by phone from Olympia, where the Senate is in session, and he's had to step out to take a vote in the Senate. If you haven't watched it on TVW, I highly recommend it. Very riveting. The Senate, unlike the House, doesn't have voting machines. They step out onto the floor, and they give their vote, you know, verbally. So thanks again. I think Dan had a follow-up question for you.
Yeah, I think we're going to get into the politics a little bit more in a second. But just back to how this is affecting, you know, people in your district, whether they be property owners who are paying property taxes or renters who see those costs often passed on. I think in Seattle, what the assessor's office told me was that the owner of a median valued home is going to pay $825 more this year than the median valued homeowner last year. Are you hearing from constituents about that?
Absolutely. I will say that when there was a big article that ran in the Seattle Times about this, because I had asked the assessor for that data right away, and I posted it up, and there was a lot of coverage of it. And I've just received just an extraordinary number of emails, and a lot of that is from retired folks. I mean, senior citizens who might be house rich and cash poor, been living in their house for 20, 30 years, even 10 years. I mean, property taxes have gone up 50% in 6 years. And our over-reliance on property taxes is really disproportionately impacting real folks. And we've just got to stop pretending otherwise.
And what about people who say, well, those people are sitting on a gold mine. I mean, the value of their home has skyrocketed, and you know, they're home rich, they're property rich, and they should be okay.
You know what? Our over-reliance on any one leg of the stool of a tax system just doesn't make sense. We have a high sales tax. We have increasingly high property taxes. We have overall low business taxes. And we, of course, have no personal or corporate income tax. And so we have a wobbly system that doesn't have stability and structure to it. So when you have a dependence upon property taxes, cities, the county, the port, the special purpose taxing districts, and now the state all double down on property taxes, it becomes a real issue. So this idea that everyone can just take it and not have more equity to it across the board at a more broad-based level makes, you know, is a real issue.
So Democrats now control the state House, state Senate, have the governor's office. What's to stop your party, the Democrats, from going in and adjusting this? I mean, I recognize it's a short session, but I thought there was some talk about that last year. Is there any movement toward adjusting this so it's not so, you know, as you describe it, punitive?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the bills are out, and so it's impossible to do something just tactically for 2018. In 2019, the property tax swap, the shift from some of the areas to other areas, begins to take effect. And so it's very difficult to do this midstream. I mean, we've cast our net, and it's a challenge. We can't underestimate the impact of divided government. I mean, we have a one-vote majority in the Senate. We have a two-vote majority in the House of Representatives. So basically, 2 to 3 votes separate the entire legislature. And so it's tough. And it, in a short session, it's very difficult. And there's a lot of issues on the table. So figuring it out. And remember, there's, you know, aside from the 7 million Washingtonians, we've got about 1 or 2 million lobbyists here in Olympia that are working pretty hard to make sure that we don't have anyone else pay the bill.
I know that Republicans, when they've advocated for this, have said, look, you know, Seattle is property rich. There has been this historic inequity. And this tax swap really was necessary, and you had to do it, and was actually, I mean, I think sometimes there's a little taunting that went on, but they've said it's like a progressive, you know, system in some way, because the rich areas of the state are paying it. I mean, is there some merit to what the Republicans are saying in that regard, in terms of there needed to be
equity? I got to run for a vote. I'll be right back. I'm back, guys. Sorry. So these are Republican amendments on the Reproductive Parity Act about abortion. So that's why every vote is critical.
Right. So, I mean, I was asking you about the Republican argument on equity around the state.
Look, everyone wants us to have a responsible grown-up tax system. The $1.50 per thousand assessed value that was the essence of the McCleary deal, and the limit of $2,500 per student that that dollar can raise, the central tenets of the Republican policy are subjective, random, and arbitrary. They were specifically designed to carve out the difference between red legislative districts and blue legislative districts. It was intentional and it was purposeful. The theory and the concept of equity between state and local levies is incredibly important, and of course I support that. But the way that it was done was punitive and political and designed to specifically carve out legislative districts. So that $1.50 rate, which is the key issue, was completely random and completely arbitrary. If it were higher and we had more less edges on this, we could have gotten a more responsive approach. It was almost, I'm not quite sure, but it was almost as if the political folks sat down with a map and somehow, just by luck, happened to come up with a number that carved out blue districts to pay and red districts to get the bill.
Right, we should say that.
I mean, the opposite.
Yeah,
blue districts to pay and red districts to get the check.
This year, it looks like most places will get a tax increase from the calculations I've seen, but as it starts to move on in years, like you said, some of those redder areas, they will actually see their property taxes decreased, right? Places like Ferndale,
and from an aggregate
Federal
point of view,
Way.
The primary beneficiary of that are the large companies, because they have so many parcels of high-value taxes in those rural areas.
So, I mean, you make it, you know, sound like you got rolled by the Republicans on this tax deal. And again, I mean, I do have to come back to the even last year, the Democrats had the governor's office and the House, and so they were only you down in the Senate. I mean, how did it happen that you had to cave to this?
Well, I think that's a fair critique. I mean, I think the Republicans doubled down on this model, and I think in the end of the day, most Democrats went along with it rather than shut down government and kick out foster kids and other things. We went down to the last 24 hours, and the Republicans unequivocally demanded that this package at this level get approved, or they shut down state government. And our folks agreed that that was irresponsible and just took that move. And so there's no question that the Republicans doubled down on this. There's no question that the level of the tax increase that they demanded on the middle class property taxpayers got passed, and enough of our folks went along that it passed. So there's no question that we have culpability in agreeing to that. But it was, you know, it was a full-on hostage situation, and we decided to save some lives. It's just an unpleasant, Solomonic choice.
Okay, so to step back for a second, that's how you're describing what happened and why, and you're saying that probably not this session will that be reeled back or changed. But you've been hammering away at this overall point, which is the over-reliance on property taxes. So what does the state need to do to change course, and are you going to do that now that the Democrats are in power? What about Is there a capital gains tax headed somewhere? Or carbon?
Well, there's a lot of momentum for tax reform, both in the legislature and outside in the public initiative process. Again, we're only in Olympia for 60 days, and we have two votes that separate us. Very tough. But there's a couple of examples that are really important. Within, for example, as I mentioned to you, we have five refineries in the state, $16 billion in revenue last year. Total taxes, sales, public utility, business and occupation, excise, water cleanup taxes, every single tax that they pay on $16 billion in revenue, $200 million in taxes. Their effective tax rate's 1.15%. You can't lower it more on oil refineries without a supercharged computer, a calculator. It's too many decimal points, zeros. And my point is that we fundamentally eliminated taxation from meaningful levels of major, major economic sectors in this state. And we have to have a conversation. You can't take that economic sectors off of the books.
And you are in the middle of working on a carbon tax policy the governor's proposed, right?
I got a roll call. I'll be right back.
Okay, I'm back.
Sorry. Okay, so you chair the Senate's Energy Committee, right? Yep. What's the full name of that now?
Energy, Environment, and Technology.
And so in that role, you've been championing, I think, the governor's proposal or some variation of it for a carbon tax, which really is what you were just talking about there. If you're going to tax areas of the economy like the petroleum industry that have to some extent been carved out of it, what are the prospects for that legislatively?
Right. Well, any meaningful tax reform and substantive tax is a heavy lift any year. In a short session, it's very tough. But there is momentum. It's real. We are working it hard. And it's just a question of whether there's something that's going to pass this year in Olympia or whether there will be a public initiative that will likely pass. So there's a big shift underway. And I think, you know, a year from now, I think we'll have a different dynamic because I think there's a good chance that one of those pathways will be successful.
I mean, I've seen the group called the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy, which actually opposed the carbon tax on the ballot a couple of years ago. There were some problems with that tax. I think you opposed it too in the end, right?
Yeah.
They have been sending out emails saying they're getting ready to launch an initiative in March.
It's going. I mean, this is happening. If we don't pass something in Olympia, there will be a public initiative.
And really briefly, what are the outlines of what that would look like, the carbon tax or the policy?
So the outlines of a carbon tax is basically a sort of a modest gasoline and energy tax in order to invest in renewables and next generation clean energy. And that allows for not only jobs and grid modernization and the ability to integrate wind, solar, hydro, and everything else, but really sort of a movement away from fossil fuels in a measured, responsible way. Just today, there were 9 states around the country, including Washington, that announced that they are deploying a carbon tax and energy investment bills around the country that are similarly aligned. And so there's a big national movement given that the federal government has completely imploded.
Wasn't part of the critique by some in, some environmentalists a couple of years ago, the last time there was a carbon tax on the ballot, that not enough funding would be going to, and there hadn't been enough involvement from low-income communities and communities of color. Is that something that's going to be different this time around, if that was a major critique last time?
That was the critique, and that is the difference now. In large part, we have the tribal community, as well as disproportionately impacted communities of colors, labor, business, a lot of other folks are aligned. So this alliance has learned all of the lessons. The other problem with the carbon proposal last time is that it relied upon the price signal of just raising prices and hoping people would use less vehicles. And myself and many others just don't believe that that works. That what works is how you deploy those dollars.
And I wanted to ask a couple questions about another subject here related to public records and the legislature. We had the Senate Majority Leader on a few weeks ago and asked about opening the legislature up to public records. She didn't really seem keen to endorse that. Is that something that you support?
So I personally do support it. I have one serious concern and one reservation that I would want to make sure that we adjust appropriately. And that is, and I don't mind my emails and all the calendar, all of that type of information being public. The one issue that I don't want is I want to be able to work on a bill on a piece of legislation and have that draft bill and have those edits and have those comments to myself and to my staff be protected and confidential. I don't want to have to hand over to a lobbyist on behalf of one of the largest oil companies on this particular planet a draft version of a bill if they walk in and say, I want to see a copy of it, and demand it through public records. So works in progress are just like a reporter writing an article. You know, while you're editing it and before you hit send, you want to have that ability to work in an open environment. So that, to me, is a critical piece of it. So as long as that is into it, then I'm personally comfortable with opening up the records.
There is an exemption in the law. I mean, there's a lot of exemptions in the law, actually, for deliberative process.
Yeah, say that, and all I'm saying is that that's an important piece to me, because otherwise the lobbyists are going to mow us down.
Okay. And then really quickly, another issue before the legislature on that is there's a proposal that most of your Senate colleagues have signed on to, Senate Democratic colleagues have signed on to cut off public access to dates of birth of state employees. I think that this is an effort to, it has to do with a fight between a conservative group that's been feuding with the unions a lot. SEIU got an initiative passed that does something similar for their caregivers. What do you make of that effort? Is that something that you think is necessary to do, or is it another effort to pinch off a part of the Public Records Act?
Well, as you've said, that there are dozens and dozens of specific exemptions to public records requirements and the Act. I think we have a Sunshine Committee as a state that's bipartisan and lots of folks on it. I'm more comfortable with specific tactical suggestions and issues like that going through that committee and getting a sense of what we ought to exempt. I guard with great jealousy the disclosure and public openness and records, and I think, like we all do in theory, the question is, what does it come down to in reality? And as a general rule, I absolutely default to the side of openness. So I haven't read the bill itself yet, but I'm pretty uncomfortable with that direction.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us today to talk about that and also talk about these property taxes. It's something that we're going to keep an eye on as more information becomes available on bills and as the bills go out.
That's all for episode 67 of The Overcast. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to KNKX for having us in the studio again to record. Thanks to our guests, Senator Reuven Carlisle, Democrat from Seattle. I want to remind you to support the Seattle Times and the locally owned independent journalism that makes this podcast possible at a time when there are cuts going on at a lot of newspapers around the country. We're still trying to go strong here and bring you this kind of content. Visit seattletimes.com/support.
And you can listen to the podcast, subscribe to us on iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Stitcher. Please leave us a review on iTunes if you like the show. You can reach us on Twitter at dbeekman, at jim_Bruner. Email us at seattletimesovercast@gmail.com. And until next week,
have a cloudy day.